Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top five sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
After Monday night's game wrapped up week five, who's the best team in the NFC as the Bears head into the bye? And where are the Bears in your NFC power rankings?
Boy, Seattle might be the best team in the NFC, maybe. I'm not going to say the Niners. I don't know why. I'm just not going to. The Packers, you could probably make an argument for, although I wouldn't make that argument. I think there's still some underlying stuff going on there between the coach and the quarterback, and as long as things go well, it won't come to light. But I'd put the Bears in the middle of the pack. I would not be rushing them up to the top. I think they're about middle of the NFL. So of the NFC, they're definitely capable of being high in consideration, but I would put five or six teams ahead of them at this point, just because of the way they played in London. Really, nothing else. And that, I don't know enough about Akeem Hicks and that injury and how that will affect them moving forward. I don't know enough about whether or not there's going to be any kind of issue with Roquan. He had personal issues, and then he didn't play particularly well. But again, the whole team didn't play well. And I'm curious about the quarterback when he's coming back and how that will play for the rest of the year. So I know that it's probably an overreaction to their loss, but I would tamper down expectations at this point.
I've never been more impressed with a team in the NFC any more than the Seahawks this year so far. What they've been able to do and how they've been able to do it, when they're playing in Seattle, that's a dangerous team. I'm not sure there's a better team in the NFC than the Seahawks at home. Maybe the Saints at home, but the Saints at home haven't had Drew Brees necessarily yet, and you don't know how he's going to come back. You expect him to be healthy. When he comes back, the Saints in New Orleans, probably the equal to the Seahawks in Seattle as far as a difficult venue. I like what Russell Wilson has done. That defense in Seattle is very well coached, and they're aggressive, and boy, that's a very good team that maybe I didn't expect to be at the top of the heap in the NFC at this stage of the season.
And Teddy Bridgewater, out of all these quarterbacks, he's the one that has Nick Foles on him.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
He's the comp.
A lot of it is the coach. Well, I mean, he's a really good coach.
It is the coach, but you're right.
Doesn't Minnesota regret letting him go?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I don't know about that, but I think under the circumstances, you understood that. But I think
he'd have been a lot cheaper than this other guy.
But when you compare, when you compare him to the Foles, it's a good one because he has starting experience before he became this backup that everybody trusts, and he's in charge of a team that's very good, very deep. So I would go Seahawks, Saints, Packers, out of respect for what they've done and how they've done it. They haven't been riding just the coattails of Aaron Rodgers. This is a defensive football team that now runs the football, and I like the way that they have approached this season, and I did not expect much out of Matt LaFleur, so I have to be fair in giving him credit. The Bears are in the pack with, I think, the Eagles and the Cowboys with something to prove. I think they're a team that has talent, but they have something to prove. They've got an offensive line issue. I didn't mention the 49ers because I don't know how sustainable that is. I don't know how good they really will be down the stretch. They're young. They're learning how to win. I don't know that that's sustainable. And the Vikings, I wouldn't rule them out, guys, because I know you make fun of Kirk Cousins. He is an easy target. If Mitch Trubisky had the day that Kirk Cousins had Sunday, we'd be doing cartwheels in Chicago because the passer rating was 138.6, and that was a bounce-back game for Kirk Cousins.
He's an easy target. He misses a lot of easy targets, too, so that's a couple things.
We'd be calling him a stud, David, is what we'd be doing.
Well, in this city, quarterbacks, sometimes can deceive based on a couple of good performances, but For me in the NFC, it's Seattle and Green Bay. I like Seattle. You know, Russell Wilson, always been a big fan of him. The defense is still pretty solid. They actually run the ball a little bit too. But when you compare their quality of victories versus Green Bay's quality of victories, I think I might have to put the Packers a hair above them, because not only what Green Bay did at Dallas just on Sunday, but, you know, coming in here at Soldier Field and just completely dominating and stifling the Bears on the opening night of the season. They have beaten Minnesota already this season, a really comfortable win over Denver, whereas Seattle, they've looked really good. They got a good win over the Rams, but, you know, Arizona, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, those wins don't impress me too much if we're going strength of schedule. And, you know, in the whole power rankings thing, you have to consider strength of schedule when we're this early in the season. So Green Bay, Seattle, probably 1-2. You know, San Francisco, I don't know about the sustainability either, but they're 4-0, so you have to give them a little bit of respect. I still like the Rams. I still like Philly, even though they're kind of in the same boat as the Bears right now. Teams with a lot of talent, David, like you brought up, that really have not gotten out of the gates too hot. And then Dallas has been solid, and New Orleans, of course, as well. So, boy, a lot of mumble and jumble up at the top of this conference after Green Bay and Seattle. I would probably put the Bears right now 7th in the conference, so about middle of the pack.
Yeah, I have to go with Seattle at the top. Russell Westbrook looking good. That defense looking good. Teddy Bridgewater is looking pretty formidable with the Saints. I mean, they might go undefeated with this time that Drew Brees is out. So, I mean, they're looking good. Of course, the Packers, and then the 49ers are up there, and I hope it's sustainable. I mean, that was a beautiful thing to watch the 49ers beat up on the Browns yesterday. The offensive line is really good, and I was watching with a lot of jealousy last night, as Bears fans should be, because, I mean, with the Bears' weak offensive line, you see what happens when you have a good O-line and what can be accomplished with the run game there. And I agree with Bears being just in the middle of the pack, and that's because of an elite defense. An elite defense is what keeps them in the middle of the pack, and we have so many questions surrounding this Bears offense. That's kind of a scary thing. David, I wish I could dismiss. I want to say that you're wrong. I wish I could dismiss the Vikings, but this could be. We talked about a lot of seminal moments with Joe Maddon. Last week could have been a seminal moment for the Vikings.
It could
Sunday.
Be dangerous now.
Yeah, yeah. It's scary.
I've been involved in moments, those seminal moments.
Still looking for a clear explanation on that.
Start of something.
Seahawks, I hate to say it, but Seahawks. I'm going to put the Saints ahead of the Packers just because I don't like the Packers. Followed by the Rams and 49ers. Then I think there's that middle cloud of mediocrity right now. The Eagles, the Cowboys, the Bears, the Vikings. You know, the NFC West, though, you as a Bears fan, you just have to hope that they end up beating up on each other, right? So that, because right now it looks like they'd get all the teams in the playoffs if that's even possible, outside of obviously the Arizona Cardinals. Those three teams right now look really good, but those teams are going to play each other, and somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose. Of course, there could be a tie, but the chances of that aren't very good.
Yeah, you know, I definitely get that question.
How much can the Bears' offensive line improve throughout the course of the season? Would it make sense for them to explore trading for an offensive lineman like Washington's holdout tackle Trent Williams?
Well, you're going to hear a lot about Trent Williams because the Redskins are a train wreck, and I think that they fired their coach yesterday, and Trent Williams remains a holdout. Bruce Allen said yesterday, though, when he was asked directly, and I think he reiterated, they're not trading him. They're not going to move him. They may move him in the offseason. This is a standoff. There's some issue with the medical personnel. Trent Williams is holding his ground with a year left on his contract. Maybe he's a guy you look at in the offseason. He's a 31-year-old tackle. He definitely would be an upgrade, but I don't think you're going to be able to pull that off. You don't have a lot of draft capital to move for Trent Williams, so I think it's a good talk radio thing, but I don't think it's very realistic. As for the Bears' offensive line, that's number one priority. That is the biggest disappointment to me after five games. You aren't where you want to be offensively, largely because you can't assume anything about your offensive line, except for that at some point during the game, it's going to make you want to bang your head against the wall because it's driving you crazy. Charles Leno Jr., you got to stop with the penalties. Kyle Long, clearly something's bothering him. The switch with Daniels and Whitehair hasn't worked out the way they wanted it to. And Bobby Massie at right tackle, you know, has not been, you know, model of consistency either. Can you improve during the season? I'm not sure that you can. I do think you need to make some changes during this off week. You've got an opportunity now, even though they're not practicing, to do some introspection, to study some film, and to make some changes. You've got to make something happen up front, and maybe as you, maybe you replace somebody, maybe you tinker with your depth. You've got to do something.
Yeah, Trent Williams not ending his holdout anytime soon, and they claim they're not trading him. I think the problem's draft capital. I don't think the Bears have enough to put together a decent draft. I don't know they can make a good enough pitch for him. I don't know how much he stands between you and glory. They got issues on the offensive line. They got issues in a few different places, right? I think that we're focusing on the offensive line because – they have issues in the running game right now. I think they have issues with the quarterback because they got an injury at quarterback. So I think it's easy to, oh, by the way, hey, you know what? And the offensive line's not very good. So I understand that. I understand why we feel that way. You know, I worry about Kyle Long because he is, when healthy, he's one of their best linemen. And he's also the guy that has, like, the streak of nasty to him and that will be sort of a guy there for all his teammates. He hasn't been healthy in a while, and he's clearly playing hurt. He's got a hip problem, and he is not moving very well. Hopefully the time off will get him better. I don't think they have a better option on the roster. I mean, they probably have a better option than an injured Kyle Long, but a healthy Kyle Long is their best option. And it would be great if they could get him up and running again, but it's been a long time since we've seen him actually capable of doing what he can do, and it's affected his career and certainly affected his performance. So, you know, here's hoping for a miracle cure of some sort, and here's hoping the time off gets him up and running again. You know, they got to figure out what's going on with Charles Leno. I mean, you got to really coach him up in this break. Now, none of them are around. None of them are practicing. It's not like you have a lot of extra time to get better, which is one of the reasons that, you know, you always talk. I go back to that great John Gruden thing where he talked about how an offensive line has to be choreographed and everyone has to be kicking in the same direction. And when you make a change on an offensive line and when you make a 2-for-1 shift, then all of a sudden everyone's kicking each other. And I don't know if you've ever seen a really bad chorus line, but I would imagine that would be painful.
Used to be a part of one, yeah.
Yeah, you were in that.
It was really
terrible,
bad.
You guys did.
Yeah.
You were. What were they called? The
the Kevets.
Radio City Music Hall. Yeah. The Kevets.
I thought Gruden didn't like dancing.
No, he doesn't have a disco, but
okay.
He does like.
All
but
right.
He's ready to dance. Anyway, I do think that that the best move is to get everybody improved at the position they're at, and I think that it would have been kind of seamless if Ted Larson hadn't gone down to move him in for Kyle Long. But now I worry about that a little bit. So now's not the time to be tinkering. Now is the time to be getting better. And if they have to move Coward in for Kyle Long for a couple of weeks, I would go ahead and do that and do it as soon as possible in order to get him up and running and feel like you have enough to get forward. But I think we're focusing on the offensive line because we realize there's a lot of problems and we're looking for maybe the deeper one than we realize is there. I go back to the play caller. You know, you got to start, forget the cutesy, I'm going to show how clever I am and maybe pick up a fullback in the bye week and try to run a football.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the play caller and you look at the guy who hired the play caller because he's the one that put this offensive line together. He's the one that continues to have faith in Kyle Long, even though he missed half the season last year. He missed 6 games the year before that, missed 8 games the year before that. Offensive linemen who have been beat up as Kyle Long that are 31 years old don't miraculously just become healthy and become Pro Bowl caliber players again. So I would be very fearful of putting any eggs in that basket. Charles Leno, Bobby Massey, 2 guys who are very, very well compensated financially, who are inconsistent at best. Massey, first year here was a disaster, bounced back second year, and now he's started to go the other way again. And Leno, again, the inconsistency there, you know, he's never been worth that contract, quite frankly. And that was kind of a miracle. We're going to keep that thread going here. That was kind of a miracle that he got Ryan Pace to sign off on that thing. So the offensive line is an issue. And, you know, as far as Trent Williams goes, you know, good player, but they can't keep trading these draft picks away. I mean, this is absolutely unbelievable. Talk about mortgaging your future. And when you look at, again, back to Ryan Pace, a guy who, for every good pick that he's made, you know, when you look at a guy like an Eddie Jackson, who was kind of a diamond in the rough, what, fourth round pick, you for every Eddie Jackson, you've got an Adam Shaheen or a Hronis Grassou or maybe an Anthony Miller, who was a high pick that hasn't really justified his selection yet there as well. So they should not be trading any more draft picks. I think that's a really bad idea. You're just going to have to hope for health. You're going to have to hope for the pendulum to swing the other way. You hope that the track record with some of these guys shows that they can't possibly be this bad throughout the course of the season. Maybe the bye week or almost 2 weeks here with how much time they have for the next game, maybe they can regroup and try to get back to as close as 100% healthy and on the same page as possible. Because I don't think, you know, anybody's walking through that door, especially not Trent Williams.
No, I agree with that. The draft capital has been spent. It just can't be done. I mean, you have to, you know, repair, make some changes to the offensive line, whatever, but it's going to have to come from within. It just has to. Luckily, you have a bye week here to try and make something happen. I agree, Mully, with the Rashad Coward could be an answer. It's a shame what happened with Kyle Long and his health and how that's been going over the past handful of years, because he was very good, and when he's healthy, he's very good, and he's just not looking like Kyle Long anymore. It seems like his best days are behind him, unfortunately. So whether it be Rashad Coward or, as Big Z reported on yesterday, maybe Alex Bars could be some kind of answer for you, but it's going to be an answer from within. There's just no way you can trade to bring anybody in at this point.
All right, let's just one thing first. Trent Williams isn't coming, so let's just until maybe next year, but not this year. So let's just stop that one altogether. That's not going to happen. You know, Mully, you and I talk offensive line on the air, off the air. We love offensive line play. It's fun to talk about. It's fun to look at. You had a great rant yesterday. Ray put it in the open today. And, you know, the big question is, now, right this second, I'm down on this offensive line. But to your point, they haven't committed to the run. And much like you've talked about, an offensive line needs to work together in unison like a dance team. Like a running back, everybody sees it on TV where they bake like a bowl of cereal or soup and they do the feed me the ball thing. The offensive line's the same way. They just don't do that on television, right? They need to get a lather. They need to get moving downhill. They need to be firing off the ball. And they haven't really had the opportunity. When everything is this zone, let me just kind of get my rear end or my shoulders in front of the other guy and just stand in between. And then we got to let a rookie, David Montgomery, figure out where those little gaps are to hit instead of actually pushing. I mean, when you want, like, if you go back and watch, and I did yesterday afternoon, Richie Incognito, the Raiders offensive line, they're moving their feet, they're moving their legs. The Bears seem to kind of fire out of their stance and like just turn their shoulders, just like, let me get in the way of you. There's never any moving the pile, and I don't know if they can do that, but I don't think they're being coached to do that anymore. It's this zone blocking scheme. So I'm excited to get into this conversation deeper with Thayer. The wild and crazy move I would make, me being crazy, and you're going to totally disagree with this, they can decide which tackle they want to sit, okay? And I would move Cody Whitehair, who right now has been a complete disappointment this year for the amount of money they've paid him. I would move Larson into Whitehair's place, and I would bench one of these two.
Larson's hurt.
Well, maybe he won't be hurt come
You could bench one of these tackles
days.
Without doing that. I mean, you could.
Yeah,
you
but
could,
who's playing?
Alex Bars could play one of the tackles.
I just don't know if he's ready for that.
Yeah, I'm not sold on
that. I think
that
Cody
either.
Whitehair is just ready with more snaps. I mean, let's put it this way. If Bars can play tackle, I think Whitehair can play tackle, okay, at least for a little bit. I think something's got to be done, but I think Nagy also has to commit, and I think there needs to be a shakeup. And I think maybe they neutered Kyle Long with the whole not letting him be Kyle Long in practice. And maybe
he's hurt.
That's
he looks hurt.
Man.
Yeah.
I don't know. They don't move downfield, so I don't know if he's hurt or not.
How many more days are we going to get the Dustin Rhodes-Richie Incognito love affair, by the way? Because that's two straight days you're just fawning and slurping all over this guy. How many more days do I have to put up with that behind the glass?
I think it's 12 more days till the Bears play again. Listen, I'm just saying, we had a texter yesterday. He's a bad guy. Okay, but guess what? Football's a bad, nasty game, okay? And you need bad guys, especially in the middle of the field where not a lot of people are paying attention. Okay, whether he was cut blocking or not all day, guess what? The Raiders won, and they did it by running the ball down the Bears' throats.
I don't quite get the question.
Can you please rate the candidates for the Cubs manager position in order of who should be hired, not who will be among Mark Loretta, Will Venable, Joe Girardi, and David Ross? Is there any other candidate that you would wait on?
I think they're going to hire Ross, and I know that's not the question. I think that they should hire Joe Girardi first, Mark Loretta second, David Ross third, Will Venable would be my fourth choice in that group. Again, that's me not interviewing them or knowing a hell of a lot about it. But I think that if they're looking for discipline and they're looking for accountability, which was the word that was thrown around a lot, that's Joe Girardi, right? But I don't think that's what they're looking for. I think they're looking for David Ross. Now, there's other people have been mentioned, Houston.
Joe Espada.
Joe Espada and Raul Ibanez, mm-hmm. and, from the Dodgers. We've heard a lot of that being talked about. But, that's great if you want to wait and talk to those guys. But Joe Girardi's probably going to be gone if you wait because he's the guy that another team would want to hire. David Ross will be there, so you may as well wait and then hire David Ross if that's what you're going to do. But why not take that into account, like what other people would
want
to do?
Who else wants to interview David Ross besides the Cubs?
That's what I was driving at.
Isn't that telling?
And he'll wait on them, right? Because that's the only job he wants.
Forever.
Yeah.
I think that we've established that we both like Girardi, and I think for the reasons that we've talked about, the experience, everything.
The definition of the job.
And the
accountability.
Everything that they were looking for, he fits the profile. I would definitely have him first. I would have Mark Loretta probably second, just because
experience,
and he is also, a guy that sounds like he fits the part. Ross seems experimental to me, but maybe he'll be a great manager, but he could also be a lousy manager. I think the boomer bust factor, if you want to go all draft lingo on us, is big with David Ross. Then maybe Venable after that. I would probably talk to Joe Espada. He comes highly recommended, and he's part of a really strong organization now. I don't know about Ibanez. It seemed a little bit more like a reach to me as well. But that would be the order that I would put them in. And I don't know that's going to happen. And I just, whatever happens with Joe Girardi, I hope they leave him in the booth, because every game that I watch with him in the booth, I learn something about baseball.
I'm very intrigued by Joe Espada. I think that, anybody that has the, I don't know, what would be the opposite of having Astro stink, maybe a nice Astro aroma, a nice scent wafting off of a very successful organization. I think anybody that is involved with the Houston Astros would be a good candidate for a managerial job. I think they're what the Cubs wanted to be. When you look at how stacked they are in pretty much every facet, when you look at their lineup, their bullpen, their rotation, their consistency every single year, I think anytime you can get somebody that's a part of that, I think you have to consider that. From the other guys on this list, I'd probably say Loretta first, because he sat on the bench all season long, and he's, if we're talking about experience, he's probably got a lot there with this specific group. Ross second, since he knows all these guys, and he seems to be the front runner anyway. Girardi, I think, is just, I don't want to say too old school, but, he just seems, he can come on the show and he can talk about, being Binder Joe and all that, but he just doesn't seem like he is going to jibe with the same mentality as Theo and Jed and some of the higher ups. So from this list, Loretta, Ross, Girardi, Venable would be my order, but Joe Espada might be the dark horse and might be the best candidate out of the whole bunch.
Yeah, my ranking will go Girardi because of the experience as a manager and the postseason experience and all of that. So Joe Girardi, Mark Loretta for being the bench coach, being Joe Madden's right hand man, and then Will Venable being on the coaching staff. David Ross has no managerial experience, and I know that teams have won World Series. Look at the Red Sox with a manager with no experience whatsoever. But if we're going to rank them, I'm going to put David Ross last for that reason. I do like Espada as a candidate, guy with a lot of experience. But Ibanez is another good name that's been floated out there, but he apparently told the LA Times that he's not ready right now to be a manager, so that name is not even in the mix anymore. Molly, I can't help but think, though, I'm with you, that David Ross is going to be the guy.
Who should be hired? Joe Girardi, David Ross, and then I'll talk to Espana. I get why they're interviewing. I get why they're interviewing the guys that they are, Will Venable and Mark Loretta. But if there's this Joe Maddon stink on the Cubs, where were those two guys? I'm just not a fan of the idea that the bench coach who was on a team, or a first base coach or a third base coach that was around a team that failed to live up to expectations, has all the answers in his back pocket and just decided not to share them with Joe Maddon.
It's chain of command, man. You can't go above
stop,
your head.
Stop, okay? Chain of command. Stop, okay? Stop.
You're not my boss.
Okay, Dennis. Ooh.
Mitch isn't here today.
People to my right always love to say that.
That's a crazy question. I ain't never been asked that one.
What do you make of Daryl Morey and his Twitter flap? Has the NBA put money making over human rights? And how should sports leagues proceed in politically charged situations?
Well, it's more than a Twitter flap now. It's become an international crisis. And maybe Daryl Morey should have known better than to tweet something that was pro-Hong Kong, pro-democracy, and maybe anticipated what would come next. That said, I think with the way the NBA has responded to this, Adam Silver kind of had a press conference this morning in Japan, and I think he tried to walk back some of the original, put out some damage control today, is the way you could put it. It's very difficult. It's very tricky. And this is a league, though, that is known for being progressive. This is a league where they wanted to ban the term owner to have... You know, it reflected more of the team governors because they were so sensitive to the language and they're very conscious of their social conscience. And I think that's laudable, but you have to be consistent. And that's the thing about, you know, when you have something like this happen, it's sort of a clash between capitalism and idealism. And the NBA is as idealistic of a league that it exists. So it's a test. It's a test of how much they believe in the principles that they espouse. And I think you're finding this out. Because there's a lot of backlash here, and the latest is with China in not televising two of the games that are going to be preseason games set to be aired in the country tomorrow. The state television network said that would be the backlash and the reaction. It's very tricky moving forward. How do leagues how should sports leagues proceed in politically charged situations? With consistency, figure out what your mission statement is, figure out what you believe in, and just try to back it up.
Yeah, this is a really difficult one because Daryl Morey, it was his own account where he tweeted out support for the people of Hong Kong who are fighting, by the way, that they, I don't know if everyone understands what's going on there. They want to make sure that they cannot be taken to mainland China, that if they're protesting, they can't just be arrested and taken to mainland China. There have been so many human rights violations in China. It's shocking stuff. And so he tweets out his support. Now all the NBA has tons of deals and tons of contracts, and the Chinese market is the future of the NBA. They sell so many jerseys and sneakers and individual players. I believe Dwayne Wade has his own shoe contract with a Chinese company. The Rockets are obviously with Yao Ming. Yeah. They have long had a great footing in China. I am a supporter of Manchester United. They have been visiting China since the 1960s. So they were on the ground doing business, selling their shirts with they have more fans than anywhere in the world because they have the Chinese market. They at one point had a monopoly on it, and now other teams have gone in there. It's all about jersey sales and the mass population and ways of kind of increasing your bottom line. So that is what a sports league is supposed to be about? That's what you got to ask yourself. And the NBA immediately tried to kind of backtrack from some of the stuff that Daryl Morey did. And it's as a result of some of the apologies, now you get politicians jumping in. Why are you apologizing for that? It's, everybody has a cause and everybody's jumping on board. And the NBA has, in a very large way here, put money making ahead of everything else. And I don't know that sports leagues need to do that, but one thing I do know is that people don't want anything. They don't want sports leagues involved in politics. So it's always a misstep when you do get involved in politics, but are human rights politics? That's really ultimately where this question comes down. And if you're going to be a league, as David mentioned, that wants to ban the term owner because of a past, because of history, how can you ignore the history of what's going on?
You only listen to your social conscience when it's convenient.
That is really the problem. So it's a sticky wicket for the NBA to try to navigate.
Yeah, I'd call it gutless from the NBA, you know, for a league that does try to espouse, you know, wokeness and, you know, social justice and all that, which sounds great in theory. And then you go turn around like this and you lick a boot that says made in China right on the sole of it. And you have pretty much, yeah, you trot James Harden out there, be like, ooh, sorry about that, China. You know, let's sell 1.3 billion jerseys because that's really all we give a damn about. Is making money. So the NBA is gutless for doing this. It's just about as gutless as, you know, the president glad-handing with the dictator of North Korea for a photo op and for good publicity. It's just about as gutless as Steve Kerr, who has an opinion on everything. He asked him about this yesterday, and Steve Kerr clams up because he's going down the same route. So everybody's gutless in this situation, except for Daryl Morey. Good for him for actually, you know, he's a very intelligent guy. Good for him for actually standing
Northwestern
up.
Northwestern guy.
Northwestern and MIT, I believe.
Deleted the tweet, though.
He did delete the tweet because, right. Again... It's all about licking that boot.
The NBA has me so confused on this with the progressive way that they the progressive, like, the thoughts that come out of the NBA. You know, like you guys brought up the example of the banning the term owner. This is a team that pulled the All-Star game out of Charlotte because of the state's anti-transgender bathroom bill. Things like that. But what this says is, you know, we are progressive and we care about people until it hits our pocketbook. So that's a shame to me. They could have very easily, as you point out, Molly, this was Daryl Morey's personal account. They could have very well just said those are his opinions, not necessarily ours, and not give a full on apology and all that. So it's very disappointing.
I mean, where are Nike shoes made? Right, where are Reeboks probably
Dick's
made?
Sporting Goods.
Where are Adidas made? The problem is you have to have shoes on your feet, okay? And if you don't want to pay like $200 for a pair of shoes to know that they're made in America or know that they're made by recycled products, you have to buy the shoes that are made in these countries. And those countries have a billion people they're trying to sell jerseys and hoodies and shorts and socks and shoes to. That's what this is all. That's what this is all about. I we don't have enough time. I mean, this is way bigger than a 5 at 5 question, right? This is that we could go all day on this. I could go all day on this. So that's all I can say because it's 5:58. We still have one more question to go.
What kind of question is that?
Yes, very quickly. What do you think of Brett Favre telling Peter King he absolutely worries he played too long in the NFL? Should the league put term limits on certain positions? And will Tom Brady or Drew Brees feel the same way one day?
Oh, boy. I mean, there's a lot on this one, too. I mean, Peter King went down to Brett Favre's house and they did a podcast because Brett Favre turns 50 next week, right? Or in a week. And Peter King apparently was talking with Favre about a couple of stories, which Favre did not recall before they got to the podcast. And they started talking, and Favre said that really bothers him, that he can't remember some of that stuff. He also said that he only had three or four concussions over his career, but that he was dinged 300 times maybe over the course of his career. I don't think, you know, the idea of term limits would be to protect the player from himself. And I think that Favre wanted to play all those years, and people may have talked to him about it. I think it's fascinating, you know. Julian Bales, the former Pittsburgh Steelers doctor, contacted him to see if there were levels of stuff going on with him, and they were going to do some tests. Favre said he didn't want to know. So I think like a lot of people, regrets decisions that he made as a young man. Is there a way of sort of reeling that in and getting someone to stop? How are you going to get Tom Brady to stop playing football when his whole life is devoted to it and his everything he puts in his body, everything he does is designed to help them play. And
you're
I
not.
Don't know
you
how
should
you do it.
These are grown men making decisions, and they're professionals. That's their choice. Brett Favre is as quotable at 50 as it was at 40 as it was at 30. This guy likes to talk. He likes to reminisce. And I respect everything that he said about having too many hits, but these were his choices. He had retirement more times than a heavyweight boxer. I mean, this is the guy who was always wanting to play one more down, one more season, one more game.
He was going to retire at Soldier Field one time.
Yeah,
remember,
he was crying and everything. Kramer was there.
And he played like five more
years. And he came back. So I don't know. I just think this is a funny narrative. Great story. Well written. And I like Brett Favre, but I don't know about term limits. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know about term limits either. I mean, Brett Favre, and I don't want to make light of this, but guys had a lot of concussions. Guys had a lot of issues with substances. Maybe you put all those together, you know, with a football career and age, whatever he is now, what, 50 years old? I don't even know. He probably isn't feeling too great.
He'll be 50 in a week.
Yeah, he probably doesn't feel too great. I'm not surprised about that. But at the end of the day, you do have autonomy to make money as long as somebody is going to pay you that money to work in this country. And he chose to continue to play football and make money. And I think maybe at the time he wasn't considering what the consequences would be down the line. But term limits, I think, is pretty ridiculous. If a team is going to pay you to play, you should be able to play.
This is always kind of sad when we hear these retired players talk about these types of issues. You know, you have Brett Favre here. You hear what Jim McMahon, how he describes living his life, the things he goes through. It's kind of sad. But no term limits. I mean, these guys choose to do this. They can walk away whenever they want. So it's all up to them. It's their choice. Maybe Brady and Breeze will feel like this, but it's their choice to continue to play into their 40s.
I love that Brett Favre is now talking so much more. Like, he went away for a while, and I'd like to see him on a broadcast or in a studio show. That's the whole, not the question.
Monday Night Football?
I'd like to see him around. Some of the games are so bad that the storytelling would be better. As far as this goes, though, I mean, these are all great quarterbacks, but they all played the game very differently, right? I mean, Favre played with a reckless abandon that Drew Brees and Tom Brady don't have. I don't think Tom Brady and Drew Brees are going to have the head-type injuries that Brett Favre is going to have. So, no term limits, no.
312,
limits, not term limits.
312-644-6767. That is the telephone number. It's Mully and Hall on the Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.